The SparkFile podcast may contain profanity and other adult content.
Please use your discretion.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my SparkFile. Could be something that I want to make or how I want to be. I pump it in my SparkFile. I jump into my SparkFile. Let's open up the SparkFile.
Welcome to the SparkFile, your one-stop Sasquatch for creative inspiration.
I'm Laura Camion.
I'm Susan Blackwell. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome.
Welcome.
You may be asking yourself, what exactly is a SparkFile?
Mm-hmm.
Where do I get one?
Mm-hmm.
What do I file in it? These are good questions. Y'all, we've got answers.
Yes, we do. A SparkFile is the place where you consistently collect all of your inspirations and fascinations. And if you're anything like us, you're making stuff all the time, you already know that sometimes the wellspring of inspiration can run a little dry. We are here to refill it.
We are on the lookout for fresh ideas, images, and inspirations that spark our creativity and pique our curiosity, things that inspire us to get off our asses and make things like this very podcast.
Mm-hmm. Or a business dedicated to making the world a better place.
Or a beautiful wedding ceremony that not only gets you married, but also provides every guest with the access they need to celebrate the day with
mm-hmm.
you.
On today's Makersode, we're going to talk to someone who really sparks us.
And that someone is Angela Johnson. Angela, welcome to
The SparkFile.
Hi. Hey, guys.
Angela Hi. Johnson is a professional entrepreneurial mm-hmm. woman
mm-hmm.
who
yes,
is also sitting on the floor to conduct this interview.
Word.
Yes.
As true professionals
it.
Do.
Her choice.
Yes,
totally.
My choice.
Her
comfortable.
That's right.
She's
top priority.
She's grounded. So mm-hmm. Angela is the founder of Invest in Access, and that is a company committed to universal access. She's a subject matter expert in the areas of accessibility and disability inclusion. And some of you may have just heard those sentences and might be like, I don't know what that means. So Angela, let's start with this. What is your mission with Invest in Access?
So my mission is to bring recognition and visibility to individuals who live with physical or mm-hmm. psychological differences.
Excellent.
And so we do that by contracting with individuals or organizations to advance access.
Mm-hmm.
This can be on a personal basis, you know, home organization, cluttering of emails, on a community basis, working with organizations to ensure their events, meetings, social media are fully accessible, and also on a corporate basis to mm-hmm. look at, say, organizational change management
mm-hmm.
and accessibility, inclusion in dialogue and conversations.
You know, you do a lot of work around universal access. Can you tell us what that is?
Capital U, capital A.
That's right.
Capital yeah. U, capital A.
Universal
yeah.
access.
Yeah.
I did not know this.
Yeah, universal yeah. access. So universal access means that any individual can fully participate.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about reimagining environments through a lens of accessibility, basically whatever the circumstance may be. So I really feel that disability inclusion is our next human rights hurdle.
Word.
Yeah, to yeah. advance as a nation. And a lot of times when people think about disability, they just think about what they can see, like people in wheelchairs,
mm-hmm.
people who may use hearing devices, they have mobility aids, but some disabilities are hidden disabilities.
That's right. And we're going to get into exactly what that means. Would you mind taking us back for a moment and tell us a little bit of your backstory, why all of this is so important to you? So important that you made it your life's work.
Sure. Yes. So I live with a hidden disability of obsessive compulsive disorder. And yes, and OCD is classified actually as a mental illness.
Really?
Yes. It It most definitely is.
Wow. Yeah. We have looks of shock.
Yes. Yeah. Like, yeah. Really? Psychological difference. And so gratefully, the narrative around disabilities and mental illness is evolving. It's becoming more welcoming. Mm-hmm. Instead of saying, you know, I have a mental illness, some highly progressive leaders now utilize the term neurodiversity.
Neurodiversity,
which is the concept that neurological differences amongst people should be recognized and respected. Mm-hmm. It's treating it neurodiversity as any other form of diversity, such as race or sexual orientation. Yep. So it's looking at psychology as, you know, not this is an error with me, but this is something that can be understood, can be understood about other people. And there's a lot of psychological differences that are examples of neurodiversity. So certain anxiety disorders, Asperger syndrome, dyslexia, Tourette syndrome. Mm-hmm. Another hidden disability would be chronic pain. And that's, you know, lots of loved ones or family members, friends you may have, you know, may live with chronic pain and it's under-recognized, perhaps. And so in my case, my disability was hidden even from me. But looking back, like it was very prevalent in my life. I was super ritualistic as a kid. I would experience what's called magical thinking, which is basically you're connecting two unrelated events to one another. So like this song just played, that just means in 3 hours this is gonna happen, I'm never gonna date the boy I like or something, you know. So it's like it's connecting very detached thoughts. I think that's like what magical thinking is. And it all is hidden because it just stays in your mind, and so people don't really know that you're having this like internal dialogue.
But your neurodiversity, it seems, just from my knowledge of you, your neurodiversity has helped you excel in certain work environments. It seems to me, in many ways, aspects of your neurodiversity you have translated into your true superpowers.
That's really true. That's totally correct. You know, I'm hyper focused. I mentioned, you know, hyper vigilant, really positive, hyper positive. You know, so it's almost like I stay consistently like this all the time, which is difficult for some. I'm detail oriented, very observational. I'm really great with logistical memorization, and that definitely comes in handy a lot with work. My loved ones tend to loathe that one. They'll say like, Angela, how did you know I was going to be at this meeting that ends at such and such time? And it's just because I've memorized it from knowing it long ago.
Somebody
or something.
Can say it one time and it can
it
stick.
Just stays with me. Schedules or lots of people's.
So it's obviously made some things easier and or easier to excel at or succeed at, but I suspect it might have made a few things harder as well.
Yes. You know, definitely speaking with employment sometimes, you know, I would have these phases where if I was very like in my thoughts or what have you, then I would leave those environments. I would be really rigid. Like up until about 3 years ago, I didn't go out after dark, which is like something that's, you know, very different. I had
people probably just make the assumption like, obviously we can plan something at 7 or 8 or 9 and like, what's the problem?
No. And it would be that just like friends intuitively knew she does brunch. She's like in by dark, you know, but it was really because I had like fears around that. Eating certain foods, I would get paranoid if I felt like something was wrong with food. I actually used to throw out like my family's food or other people's food because I would think like, you know, this is bad, like something's wrong with it. They'd be like, Angela, this was leftovers from yesterday. Like, why, you know?
Going into the coworkers, the company fridge in the kitchen and just like,
can you imagine your lunch? Can you imagine?
I had a feeling about it.
I had a feeling, and you just like really think it's the right thing to do, and people are like, what is wrong with you?
They must have loved that.
It's now it's laughable.
Angela,
thank God,
didn't really do that. I just made that up. That was a joke.
You know, so, and I guess the really big thing was that I couldn't leave messages unread. So and especially nowadays with all of the notifications.
It's so funny that you say that. I can imagine how that could be to your detriment, and I can imagine how an employer would
It used to be, you know, something like instantaneous reporting would be what would be like expected of me and known that she does, you know, she's responded to this email as though it's a text message.
You can't control your
Yeah, I had to learn how to prioritize was, because something like taking out the trash felt equally important as something like paying my AT&T bill or something. You know what I mean? Right. So it's like, it's learning to prioritize what is it.
If you were at the theater or it at the movies with friends or something, would you still be checking? Would you?
I would leave like consistent. Like I would probably walk out of a movie theater maybe once or twice during a movie.
Sure.
Yeah. Like for the quote unquote restroom, it's because I would be checking something. I had spans of time. Yeah.
You sound like the best employee in the world.
Best employee. I was a really great employee.
But
yes.
I can imagine how difficult it would be to like relax. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like,
and be present for your
down.
Friends.
And be present. Yeah, that definitely took a long time. And I took it very seriously and I got treatment that I needed. There was a time that I had CBT therapy. It's cognitive behavioral therapy.
You know, I've done that.
Have you? You have?
Yes.
Really?
I think it's the best.
Yeah, it was definitely.
I've had a lot of different kinds of
therapies. Must know more.
Yes. So cognitive behavioral therapy was absolutely what set me back on a new path.
Yeah.
there was a time when I would have 60 to 90 minute sessions three times a week for 4 months straight.
Well, you were kind of learning so much about yourself.
Yeah.
And then learning how to walk kind of a different path with your learning.
Correct. Right. Yeah. Because I'm still the same, you know, but I just like function in the world better.
In a way that's healthy.
In a way that's healthier. Yeah.
And
sustainable. Yeah. Absolutely. So I can choose where my superpowers or my hypervigilance and my work, you know, are positive, just like with Invest in Access. And then I can, I've taught myself ways to power down, limit notifications, be more present with people that are close to me in my lives.
Yeah,
and it's been really good, guys.
It's really good.
I am also interested in knowing how you, like, you not only learned this for yourself and for you to learn to, you know, coping strategies and how to work with it, but you went a step further and decided to make this your life's work.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Can you talk about like how that spark of inspiration came to you?
Yes. Well, I've always known that I wanted to work on behalf of children. I love children. I love mentorship. You know, I think it's like children like ages 12, very formidable, but also those little ones, 4 and 5, you know, it's just very different. And so that's like where it started, you know. And then if I think about disability, a lot of everyday environments aren't accessible for people who live with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so my inspiration was essentially that I want children who live with physical or psychological differences to grow up in a society that recognizes them as visible and then also equally valuable contributors.
Yes.
So dedicating my life to that. Work.
Angela, what are the areas of focus that you and others who are devoted to universal access, what are y'all working on? Like, give me some examples of actual... Mm-hmm. What are you working on?
How does this play out?
Yeah. So the three big areas, I would say, that myself and others are working on are infrastructure, recreation, and workplace culture.
Infrastructure, recreation.
And workplace culture. Yes, ding, 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 right? So here we go to talk you through it. Right. So infrastructure would be, for example, creating dignified changing places for people with limited mobility. So that is a thinking thought, you know, something people necessarily haven't really heard.
Mm-hmm.
But in Sweden and in the United Kingdom, their government is working to establish changing places. And my organization, Invest in Access, is recognized as a United States affiliate of Changing Places UK. And so it's the only organization in my home state of Michigan that's associated, a formal member, and then also a couple of organizations throughout the United States. But how it works, you know, implementation-wise, is that I'm talking with my city officials to ensure that changing places are implemented into our city's Universal Access Park in 2020.
So when you say changing places,
correct.
Let's break it down.
Yeah.
What you're talking about is there are not just babies, but like people with disabilities
who
need support,
dignified access.
To have places where they can change. You and I were actually talking about this off mic, that for some people, like, they have to be right now because there's not a dignified space for them, like laid on the floor of a public bathroom.
Yeah.
Like at the airport, I think about like trying to travel.
Exactly.
Or a subway. Where are you going to go?
Yeah. And so it really limits people presently. Yeah. You know, you don't
this
go out
like
or.
It's huge. That it should already, in the same way that changing spaces for babies.
Correct.
Exist in the world with some frequency. It seems like it should exist as part, like
That's
if
right.
you go to a big box store.
Correct.
There should be a bathroom.
Yeah.
With a dignified changing place.
Yeah. And it really gets into, like, I could talk about this for hours, but it really gets into economic opportunity too, because a lot of times these, individuals and their loved ones or caretakers don't go out to these big box environments or stores because, like, you would have to limit your trip. You would have to do, there's a lot of considerations. Right. It's just not for you. And so it becomes that catch 22 of people thinking, unfortunately, I don't see this type of person. So they don't exist.
Of course you don't, because they can't even go out in the world.
This starts to give me,
exactly.
About, Cammie and I talk about, like, when something gives you a visceral feeling, start paying attention to it.
Yeah.
This starts to it starts to become very real to me.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And very visceral to me because I'm like, yes, of course.
Yeah.
This makes perfect common sense.
Yeah. People with, say, like cerebral palsy, or if you're paraplegic, it's true. And so you'll see in, you could Google, changing places or something, or look it up online, and you'll see the pictures that people will kind of post, the realities of their loved ones being on the floor, or they'll take a cot, et cetera. Infrastructure is big.
Infrastructure
big.
I am feeling infrastructure.
Yeah. Most definitely. And then recreation. So a lot of recreational options right now are not accessible for people who live with disabilities. But at the same time, people with disabilities really have the same, wellness benefits from recreation as an able-bodied person. Mm-hmm. And so I'm collaborating right now with Dr. Farinmi Okunlami. He is a physician at the University of Michigan, and he is leading their adaptive sports programs.
Oh, wow.
So it's awesome. It's basically where people who live with a disability and people who are able-bodied play sports side by side. And so it really drives home that message to those who believe otherwise, that, disability is not inability.
That's
and,
right.
We coexist, And then, along those lines of coexisting workplace culture, it's working with organizations to create equity in regards to disability in the workplace. So ensuring that there's guidance on captioning services, ASL interpreters for meetings, and utilizing inclusive language when speaking.
That's amazing. I'm sitting here and I'm listening to you and I'm like, you are doing great work in the world.
Yeah.
Thanks. I need to get my shit together.
No, not at all.
God, what are you doing?
What's happening?
What am I doing?
I'm this entrepreneur sitting on the floor
You are making such good stuff happen in the world.
Thanks, Susan.
I keep going sidebar here, but my mind keeps going back to, like, I like to trace things back. I like history. I like, figuring out, like, how did we get here?
Sure.
And I'm curious to know, is this a result of, like, literally people feeling early on as city planning is happening? Like, just that you are supposed to stay hidden away if you have any kind.
Exactly. This is historically. Yeah. I mean, my opinion would be, yes, absolutely that, it just was not in our conscious. If you were a certain type of different, it kind of goes through that system of was it race? Was it women? You keep your differences hidden away. We're not planning for that. We're not doing that. That's not a thing. And so, because it's true, people worry. There's gratefully new standards of mental health and institutions, et cetera, but people Yeah, it wasn't thought in mind. Exactly like you said. Yeah, like you've said it. You said it great.
An age where it is about making it visible and literally saying to everyone, come out into the light.
Yeah.
Come and join the world.
Yeah, and this is here for you.
And we'll try to make it.
Sidebar on your sidebar. I'm my brain is sparking.
Yes, mine is too. Right now. This is crazy.
I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, we'll talk more about this in a moment, but I want to do everything that we can in our workshops, in our kind of, there's always a point in the show where I'm like, I'm going to burst into tears. Workshops like for the podcast where I kind of, where I'm like, how can we make this as accessible as possible?
But we're going to get there. We're totally going to get there.
Okay.
What are the big takeaways you want us to know?
That you come across a lot more people than you realize that live with a disability or a difference.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It does remind me of that saying, be kind.
Yeah.
Everyone you meet is fighting a great battle.
It's a little akin to walking in someone else's shoes as well. Yeah. Like,
empathy.
You have no idea what other people are going through.
Angela, I've known you for years.
Many years.
And have always thought of you as this very high functioning, and you are like very, you know, you want to get something done. You have a campaign that you need run. You have a big event that you need to have planned and executed. You are a go-to. And that is true. And what I just wasn't considering is that underneath that, you may have felt like a spinning top because of neurodiversity.
Right. Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
With the, both of these things can be true. You can be managing your OCD and excelling and succeeding in a million ways.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we can both be happy.
And
at
I think
the same
that's where we're headed, you know. Yeah. That's absolutely.
Okay. So if we are going to keep our eyes open and know that more people than we may suspect are sort of living with a disability, a hidden disability, what can we think of in terms of making a difference?
Yeah, so very much as you said, you know, for people in general, don't assume the worst of others, you know, extend a bit of understanding when people might require things differently or their minds work differently. So, you know, it's just really like listening and being patient with people that you might think like, why can't they get these words out, you know, and it's really something else might be going on. And if you can be a calm presence, that really is helpful to others.
I think there's something to that. Yeah. I know that sometimes when I have met somebody who has a visible disability, sometimes I get scared that I'm going to do it wrong, or that I'm going to somehow it wrong. I don't know what that even means.
Well, sure, it is.
But yeah,
I'm but do that it wrong. Idea of just like slowing down and being patient, that and just like taking time.
Yeah,
that,
absolutely.
That speaks to me.
Speaking directly.
So help me move past this fear that I'm going to do it wrong, that we're going to say the wrong term, that we're going to take the wrong
It's nerve-wracking.
This is a real fear I have though with this podcast. I'm so afraid. Sometimes I get so afraid. I'm just like, I'm going to do it wrong. And so to help in the realm of this, in this work that you do, Angela, how can we just stay in it and move through it.
Yeah. I mean, I think even when you were mentioning earlier, you know, about wanting to ensure that you're doing everything possible to make the podcast accessible, that forethought in and of itself is leaps and bounds, you know, ahead of many people. So you are already on the right track, you know? And I think that in society in general, you know, taking time out of your day to acknowledge the humanity of another person, totally never wrong,
always,
you know,
in good taste.
always in good taste. And so at Invest in Access, one of our core values is dignity, and the way that that's defined is maintaining an open mind and a respectful heart for human differences, both known and unknown to your lived experience.
Those are words to live by.
And so, you know, also too, knowing that at different points in our lives we're all vulnerable, and at times even when we don't choose to be.
So extending
compassion is really important, and then just learning about, you know, different disabilities so that you can stay present even if you do fear, like have that apprehension or fear, you know, you can be in the moment with that person.
I love it.
And I'm thinking about this in terms of the creative process, like feeling that fear, allowing yourself to be vulnerable, even when you don't feel like being vulnerable.
Yes.
You're like, I don't wish to be feeling this right now, and yet I am. Learning how to lean into it, not fighting against it. I think, you know, we're curious to know how you think that access can live, like, in the creative world, in the arts, in a podcast. If you're a creative person making things, how can you weave this into your work and just make it
standard.
Mainstream it.
And so I think the biggest, you know, way is just to be mindful of how information is being communicated in such a way, you know, for somebody who may have, who may be deaf, you know, casting breakdowns that could provide wordage such as all abilities welcome. That's kind of a clue to, you know, the accessible community and disability community that all abilities welcome. Sensory friendly performances are starting to be done. You know, and also artists traveling with ASL interpreters. That would be if there was a listener who is an artist. That is the, like, ding ding most progressive thing that you can do. Chance the Rapper, and he did so in 2017. He traveled with Matt Maxey, and he's the founder of Definitely Dope. So that would be really cool, you know, seeing some, like, rapping. So that's just
really interesting.
And it just opens it up, and it gives you literally the visual clue too that this is all accessible. I think, you know, the other one would be, you know, venues. Some venues can provide noise canceling headphones for people who are susceptible to sensory overload. You know, those headphones tend to mitigate a person feeling overwhelmed. You might have, like, a loved one who says, like, oh, I'm not sure if I can go to this theater, this public event, it's my child, or what have you. And if that was made a standard or a norm, that would be also go, would also go a long way.
That's something that I know we did at Blue Man Group, and as well as the sensory friendly performances. And it's like, I was a little bit shocked when we decided to do it because the show itself is sensory overload. But we, you know, we worked with
going that extra mile
to figure out, like, what could you do to help someone feel comfortable and be able to enjoy the show?
That's great.
Fantastic. And I know many more theaters are doing it.
And I mean, you know, disability inclusion is a win-win. Even some of our United States government, you know, provides tax incentives even to qualifying organizations and companies for their efforts in progressing disability inclusion. Most definitely.
That's great. Do you have any words of advice for us of how we can make this podcast more accessible? I mean, we've talked about a few things we wanted to do, but we're feeling vulnerable. We feel vulnerable, but we don't know all the things that we don't even know what we don't know.
Goes for everyone, right?
Help us.
What
do you think?
I think that, you know, providing translations, so captioning on to videos that are live on your website or on social media. So transcriptions of all the episodes. You can include a universal access graphic. And if you have, you know, certain graphics on your site, that will indicate that the aforementioned, you know, translates and transcriptions and translations are available.
Okay. Great. Just a quick read.
And you see, like, different, you know, marginalized communities adopt kind of their own logos, you know, but you see that those are commonly recognized if you go into social spaces. So that definitely. Monitoring the rate at which you speak during a podcast, which is tricky for me.
Does that
fast
mean,
talker.
Do you mean slow down?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's hard.
Yeah.
It's especially when we get excited, which we do a lot on this. When we're
and
like,
we talk over each other.
Like we just did.
This is where the rubber hits the road.
The work to be done. And then, you know, another one would be website accessibility. So the four most principles for website accessibility are published by W3C, the World Wide Web Consortium. So that's where, you know, anybody who's listening, and you know, you as a team could check that out as well, just to kind of see, even though it might be really like, very complicated. W3C. Yeah. And you'll start to see as you scroll through different organization sites, perhaps they'll say, this is our web accessibility statement. So it shows that by even having a web accessibility statement, they're on the track of trying to be mindful. About web accessibility.
We got a lot of work to do.
A lot of work to do.
We do.
I hope one day we tour.
I would love to tour and do our show live.
How would we make our live shows more accessible?
Yes. So I would say, you know, event announcements would be the key there. If you're a person living with a disability and you might be interested in attending an event, you're used to searching for that little addendum that's in programs that say, you know, if you require accommodation, please contact us 2 weeks out. You'll see something like that. But say you're just like an everyday, you know, just like you and me, and we want to go somewhere, we decide we want to go that evening. Now we are unable. So if you're looking to create a fully accessible announcement, you would just say, if you require accommodation, please advise what you need in order to participate most fully, and then contact us at, you know, such and such link and such and such number.
You don't have to be planning your life weeks or months in advance. You can also be accommodated the day of.
But we're going to sell out. Like,
I think tickets are, you probably will need to plan ahead.
Everyone
will.
Just because of the demand. I love it. I hear all this and I do get scared that, like, what if we can't do all these things? What if we can't afford to do all these things? What if we can barely get our shit together to make a podcast and get the podcast up online? And I just think,
that's real talk.
I really get scared, because I don't want to just like virtue signal.
Right.
That it's like, we want to be able to, our hearts are in the right place.
Virtue signal. I've never heard virtue signal.
But our hearts are in the right place. And we had this great conversation with Angela Johnson.
Oh, so now it's all done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I see.
So I get scared.
Yeah.
I get scared of like, that I'm
virtue signal. That's a good one.
That I'm, the teacher becomes the student.
Yeah, I'm going to use that.
I just get scared.
You know, we'll take it one thing at a time. You know, we are like living in a great time where anything that is an effort is at the forefront of disability inclusion. And, you know, and so I think that, you know, don't be afraid. Just take it one thing at a time,
Susan.
Breathing. And, you know, it's all on us to, you know, fully recognize the humanity of other people and take actionable steps to create that equity. One of my favorite quotes is by Thich Nhat Hanh. He's a Zen master.
Yes.
And one of his quotes is, to be loved is to be recognized as existing.
It's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay.
But we'll just take it one thing at a time. Maybe like a thing we could do, Camion, is figure out even just like how, I've never seen a podcast do this. Maybe TED Talks do this, but like how to transcribe, how to make the transcription of our podcasts available so that if anybody wants, imagine who would want that, but maybe somebody would like to read it can't hear.
I think we should pick one thing
and then do it, and then we can tackle the next thing that we can.
And I'm always here if you guys have any.
And we can also contact Angela Johnson.
Angela Johnson is the founder of Invest in Access, a company committed to universal access. You can find her online at invest-in-access.com.
And you know, I'm going to be clicking on that I'm panicked.
When
I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm scared that I'm doing it wrong.
That's where we're going first.
I'm calling.
Yay.
So that's it. We hope that this put another bunch of sparks in your file. If there is a spark that you would like us to explore, or if you've taken a spark and you fanned it into a creative flame and you'd like to share that with us, please email us at thesparkfile@gmail.com or submit it through our website. That's thesparkfile.com.
That's right.
And be sure to subscribe to this deliciousness wherever you get your deliciousnesses. Mm-hmm. Subscribe, rate, 5-star review it. If you like this podcast, share it with people that you love. And if you don't like it, share it with people from your opposing political party.
If something tickled your fancy or got your creative juices flowing, we are writing you a forever permission slip to make that thing that's been knocking at your door. It's your turn to take a spark and fan it into a flame.
You got to spot it. You got to jot it. You got to save it. And then you got to go on and be real brave with it.
Just take it and make it.
Thank you, Angela Johnson.
Thank you, guys.
Baby's First Podcast.
Baby's First Podcast.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my spark files. Could be something that I want to make or how I want to be. I pump it in my spark files. I jump into my spark files. Let's open up the spark files.